nation.
The war on the workers.
And cooperation.
War on the workers.
When they call you a team.
War on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. They can lock us out, they can lock us up. We cannot give in.
You're listening to Cable Community Radio.
Feed on the lowly gypsum wheat, back in the saddle again.
On 90.7 FM.
About every night, and the only law is right, back in the saddle again.
Thanks for listening.
Sometimes you see that I'm mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma Lugo. I am one of several co-hosts of the program. Tonight we have on a very special guest, Dr. Mara Taylor, also known as Coach. Are you there, Coach?
Of course I am. I've been waiting for this moment, Emma, and I'm so happy to be on your show.
Oh, great. Thank you. Well, I'd like to just do an introduction first. Dr. Mara Coach Taylor is a leader in prison reform, recognized by the United Nations and social justice organizations all over the world for her work to help incarcerated people. So, Mara, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
I'm so happy. And you know that song that you open with, I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Please don't let me be misunderstood. I just love that because that speaks to so many of the prisoners that I've worked with internationally. They do feel misunderstood. And while they've done some pretty terrible things, you'd be surprised. Well, you know, Emma, but the public would be surprised at just what the good work that they're doing inside prisons and jails to get home and be good citizens.
Oh, it's just amazing. Yes, they are working so hard because they really want to set a good example when they come out.
Yes, yes.
Well, Mara, let's get started by first, tell us who you are. What do you do?
Well, right now I sit in a lot of airports, and someone said, Coach Taylor, where do you live? And I had to tell him I live at Best Western Motels because that's the hotel chain near many of the prisons that I go to visit. I go into a federal, state, and county settings of incarceration, and I share with them tools that were taught to me way back in 2002 by prisoners who were trying to figure out, how do I find this sense of internal freedom, even if I'm an LWOP, if I'm never going home? How can my life be worthwhile? Well, the freedom that they provided to me through these tools, I get to share. So I get to meet with tens of thousands of prisoners every year and give them these tools that were given to me by other prisoners. It's pretty exciting. I consider myself a very, very lucky woman.
That is just so wonderful. I know that one of the things that's it's really a challenge for insiders is trying to cultivate positivity. I know that positivity is in short supply sometimes, especially in our federal institutions. How does your program help insiders develop a positive attitude?
Well, I think, and I'm not real sure, I'm along on this ride with them. They dictate kind of the growth of this little mini peaceful revolution, this culture that's developing, and I'm just watching this organic and viral growth in sheer amazement of the potential that these humans have for good. I would say that it works because the prisoners own this. They created this. They share it. It's entirely virally spread, organically grown. And with that level of ownership, they become extremely committed to the outcome. So it's not a program. It's a way of doing their time. It's a way of living. And I think that level of ownership and knowing that people in their position created these tools to share with them makes it so they don't want to fail. They don't want to be the failure. They want to be the success story, and they want to be, across the board, a peer coach when they go home or take it back to their communities. So I'm as puzzled as most people are about it, but I do think that it's because they own it, they created it, they formulated it, and now they're sharing it. And it's growing virally and organically across the United States and now even beyond.
The program that you started is called Getting Out by Going In. How did you come up with that name, and what does the program do? Let's talk specifics.
Okay, well, I would love to say that I came up with it because I think it's pretty brilliant, but it was a prisoner, and it was at Terminal Island, a federal corrections institution at Terminal Island in San Pedro. And he said, "What you're telling me, coach, is to get out of prison, I have to go in?" And the guy next to him said, "Getting out by going in." And everybody laughed. And then the guy across the way said, "Gogi, ha ha ha, Gogi. Okay, that's our name, Gogi." And that's how it came to be, the name, which is so brilliantly describing this culture that's growing. To get out of prison, they are all turning within to find the freedom within. And by finding that freedom within, they are across the board getting released early, they're going home, they're having families and beautiful lives, because the tools that they've learned in their Gogi programming have truly set them internally free. So now their physical freedom is that much more enjoyable.
So the program really makes a difference in terms of changing a person's attitude and how they feel about themselves.
For yes, some people, I think that's right.
For some people, this may be the first time they've ever felt this positivity and some sense of like this internal freedom that you describe.
Yeah, Emma, I know you've been into corrections institutions and probably SHU and ADSEG, but when I went into Pelican and I was going door to door meeting with the men who'd been locked up, some of them for 30 years, that never had programmed. I would knock on the door and say, "Hi, my name is Coach Taylor. Do you want to do Gogi?" And they would look like, "What on earth?" I'd say, "Hey, it's created by prisoners for prisoners. Can I just leave the workbook with you? If you like it, do it. If you don't, I'll be back next week and I'll pick it up from you and give it to somebody else." And that just began to feed this fire within them, because everything else they'd read was, "You're wrong, you're criminal, we're right, you need to be like us." But Gogi says, "You can be awesome, just who you are is perfect, and we need you in communities, and here's how you can help the youngsters, here's how you can help fix the system from the inside out." I really think, Emma, I'm the most blessed person in the world, because when you can go into an ADSEG unit or a mental health unit, or when you can go into a SHU unit and see a guy who's really never seen anybody that looks like you for 30 years, and he lights up with the possibility, that is the biggest blessing anybody could have to see that spark of humanity get lit inside the soul of somebody who's been caged away like an animal for 30 years.
Wow, that is just such a wonderful story. Let's talk about Coach Taylor a little bit, and then we'll get into talking about some of the places that you go.
Sure.
You are an interfaith minister. Can you tell us, how did you get involved in prison work?
Well, a couple of things. I became an interfaith minister after I began my prison work. And why I did it wasn't really a spiritual journey at all. I looked at the federal system and I said, something's terribly wrong here. They're going to start closing the doors on volunteerism. They won't have the budget for it. They won't want to have the volunteers in a custody setting. I suspected way back in 2002 that the winds were going to change and things were going to get very different. And I thought about it and I said, well, who is not going to be kept out? And I said, well, the last people to be kept out are going to be chaplains or ministers. So, okay, if I want to go in the prison system, I'll just become a minister. I didn't know that ministerial journey that I had entered into, which took 2.5 years of my life and a lot of dedication and deep thought and study into the world's religions, I didn't know it was going to benefit me personally as much as it did. I was just using it as a tool so that no prison could ever deny me access to the prisoners. What I realized was that spiritual journey was just a wonderful aspect of who I am today. So I'm very grateful. That's probably, of all my degrees, that is the degree that I cherish the most, because it allowed me to see humans from a soulful perspective, from their unique beauty, regardless of their size, shape, or crime, or culture, or affiliation. I'm able to see past all that to the potential of the human. And I think that my ministerial studies really taught me how to look beyond what you see to what is potential in that human.
It is so true. I mean, one of the ways to, if you're an outsider and you don't have family, you want to do something, then if you want to get involved in some faith tradition that goes inside, it's really one of the best ways that you can begin to reach out to people who are on the inside. And there are a lot of reasons that you want to do that too. I mean, even if it's just to learn more about them and to hear their stories, I think that part of what we on the outside don't understand is the incredible stories that these people have. I mean, many of them have been victims of abuse.
Yeah.
They've been taken advantage of themselves. They didn't have good role models when they were kids. They didn't get very much nurturing. And a lot of people just were led into really poor decisions at a young age. And, you know, without someone coming in and providing some positive behavioral support, it's really difficult to step out of that and to begin to reframe how to make good decisions and how to, like, have a positive attitude that can help you to free yourself within so that you can succeed once you get out. Now, one of the things
Right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. The odds are against most of them from the very beginning. So when I have a friend who starts complaining that their car won't start, I just come on to prison with me.
Right.
You have nothing to complain about. Yes. You have luxury problems. They have real problems.
Yes.
Yours are luxury problems. Get over it.
Now, in your website, one of the things that you say is that, you just basically state that about 90% of all people who are incarcerated, both federal and state prisons, will eventually be released. And so I don't know, are prisons doing a good job of, like, preparing people for getting out? And
I don't think that has been the focus. I think it has been the focus to, we've got to get crime to stop on our streets. We've got to get these people to stop the drive-bys. We've got to stop the drugs. And the only way they knew how to stop it was to just lock people away. Well, that has never worked. It doesn't work when you're training a puppy. It doesn't work when we're training a child. It doesn't work when you have a 17-year-old boy and he's in the car of a guy that shot another guy and you lock him away for 26 years for it. It was a bad plan from the beginning. So, no, they want the crime to stop. We all want the crime to stop. But locking someone away and hoping that that fixes them just isn't ever a model that ever worked with anybody. Not a bee, not an ant, not a human or a dog. It just doesn't work. And I think we're having to face the fact that, okay, that plan didn't work. Maybe the rehabilitative plan might work. The problem is, if we don't get these individuals solid tools for success, knowing that living a life of service and being humble and not needing the new iPhone or the new tennis shoes or the big car or the recording contract, lowering their expectations so that they can succeed and having them feel of value, then we're setting them up for a worse failure. They're getting out saying, okay, well, now I want my recording contract, or now I need to sell my life story and be a movie star. If we do that, we are setting them up for failure. We need to prepare them to be the very best citizens they can be and just humbly inch their way up to a position where they feel comfortable at home. And that's going to be the tricky thing. We're going to be letting out a lot of individuals over the next 5, 10, 15 years. If we don't prepare them, then they're going to be giving us an excuse to just lock them back up. And I would hate to see that happen, because somebody who's spent 20 years in prison deserves to try to make it on the outside, but they need to be prepared. They need to know they're going to have to live a humble life for a little while. And you know what? Those are oftentimes the best, most satisfying types of lives to live.
Yeah, when people talk about the kind of challenges that face someone who's incarcerated, who's been coming out of the system, I don't think that they understand how many challenges there are to people once they've been released. You know, if you're coming out of prison, then most likely you're a convicted felon.
Yeah.
And so that means that you are going to have a hard time finding a job.
Yeah.
And you're also, depending on the kind of crime you committed, you're also going to have a hard time finding housing. So you're probably going to need to go to a halfway house, or if you have family who can vouch for you, then you're going to need to go there. And then you've got your parole officer, and you've got to keep up with your parole officer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like there's all of these steps that even after someone's done their time, there's still like all of these steps that they have to take, and they have the most basic problems that they have to face right away with housing, with income, and with social support. So how does?
And here's one that nobody would ever expect. When a prisoner is released and they go to the grocery store for the first time, oftentimes they panic. They don't know what to do, what to pick. Of all the cereals, there's too many. And then how do you pay at the machines, and you scan, and the woman is fast with the cash? It is scary. Or when you go to McDonald's, of all places, and they give you the food on the tray, which is familiar, but there's like 15 different numbers. What do you order? A 1, a 2, a 3? Because we have not prepared them to have these choices. They're thrown out into the world. Get a job, they say. Go get a job. Why aren't you working yet? Well, shoot, this guy doesn't even know how to pick cereal off of a long selection of 42,000 types of cereal and pay for it. And we are berating him because he's not employed yet. Or he can't go to McDonald's and choose what number because he just doesn't know what choice is. It's just an extraordinary challenge. So, and the parole officer that says, I want you here at 9 o'clock. And the guy says, I have an interview at 8:30. He said, did you hear me? I want you here at 9 o'clock. And so the guy misses the job interview. Then he's berated by the probation or parole officer for not going and getting a job. So the major obstacle to freedom is when they get their freedom. It's the biggest obstacle for them.
Yeah, recidivism certainly is a challenge. I think that it's just that, you know, that we create so many barriers, though, to success for people who have been incarcerated. So tell me, how does your program help prepare people who are on the inside for success when they get out?
I think the critical key is their peer association. Oftentimes in prison, you talk about prison talk, and you do time the way prison does time. And there's very rarely an opportunity to look at a guy and say, hey, thanks for helping me with that, or good job. With Gogi, we teach them proper or positive peer associations. So for a GOGI leader to say to a guy, hey, man, you did a really good job on that. Good. That's not your normal prison talk. You just normally would just let the guy go and say, what's he up to? He's trying to scam somebody. So we teach them positive peer associations, which then allows them to transition easier. And we provide them with simple tools that they have created to allow them to sustain that positivity. Simple things that you and I have learned all our life. I'm the boss of my brain. I know that. But our prisoners don't know that they are the boss of their brain. They don't know that. By having these little tiny tools, they are enabled to move through society far more delicately and with far more elegance, not such a chunky release, thinking that every time somebody says hi, they're trying to get something from you. So we're preparing them by allowing them to develop and nurture positive peer associations through these simple tools.
It sounds like the element of creating a peer support network within institutions is a really key component to the success of your program. Could you comment on that?
Emma, I think you're so 100% right. Without the development of a positive peer association, when you're released, you are on your own. Your family does not understand what you've been through. Your parole agent doesn't understand. Nobody understands your unique journey. And you begin to really kind of miss the people that you were in there with. Well, if those people that you were in there with are the same old with the same old prison mentality, you're going to go back to that because it's comfortable. They understand you. They know you. They talk like you talk. They feel like you feel. But if while in prison, they're allowed to have a positive peer association, if they're allowed to build a positive culture, that transitions with them. So when they get out, they now have a network. And we're seeing this increasingly, especially on our Facebook page or on our website, gettingoutbygoingin.org. We're seeing them connect and say, hey, where did you do your time? Where did you do your time? How are you volunteering for GOGI? We're seeing that network. So when they get down or when they get depressed or their halfway house closes down and they're suddenly left with no place to live, which happens sometimes, they have tools and they have a peer association that is positive. It's not the same old, same old. They're able to look more positively at all obstacles.
That's great. So within the prison culture, I imagine it would be a challenge to inspire, especially within men's prisons, the people who are on the inside to communicate this way. How are you able to kind of break through the machismo and that, the kind of prison toughness that like people get when they're on the inside? I mean, I understand that for people who are on the inside, especially within men's prisons, they do it as a form of self-protection.
Yeah.
Because there really are some very real threats to people in prison in terms of their own safety. But at the same time, having that kind of toughness, it can really be an obstacle when you get out if like you have that constant like this sense that you're going to be traumatized if you're not putting out this like really tough kind of face to everything and if that's like your internal thinking, like you're saying, then that's also a barrier because you're thinking about how are people going to try to take advantage of you, how are they going to try to hurt you, and so you never get to thinking about, oh, how can I be more positive in the community? How can I be a supportive, nurturing, responsible person? So how do you break through that, break the ice in prison?
Well, I think the ice gets broken by the prisoners. I think by the time I get there, word has gotten out that GOGI's headed our way. And I do believe that because most of our leaders are level 4 or LWOPs or shock callers on the yards or major gang leaders, most of our biggest supporters have significant time to do because they see the value. That when they see a youngster coming in, they shake their heads like, wow, what are you doing, kid? So these level 4 prisoners who've been doing a lot of time have gotten behind GOGI like no other. And honestly, it's amazing when I go into a leadership meeting at Pelican Bay or High Desert State Prison or any one of the level 4 institutions in California, for example, And you see blacks and whites and Mexicans from different gangs sitting together, and they're talking about how are we going to help the kids when we get out. And I'm thinking, gosh, you're an LWOP. What is the likelihood of you getting out? And these guys are saying, no, we're getting out. We're going to be of service to our community. It's amazing to watch that they don't, there's no ice to break. They're on fire with this thing. It's really, really exciting.
So we do have some people who listen on the inside, and we've only got about 5 minutes left. I want to get into a little bit about the program, but I also want to know if somebody's on the inside and they want to find out how to become a facilitator or learn more about how to do GOGI programming, how can they find out more about this?
Well, hopefully their prison library has at least one how-to GOGI book. We try very hard to find donors to supply how-to GOGI books to our libraries of any prison. And if a librarian of a prison asks for a how-to GOGI book, we go to a donor and we try to find that.
And that's your books. That's your main, that's your like study manual. That's the main manual.
Yeah, that's
right?
The main manual. Mm-hmm. We have in-cell study courses. So when the courts say you need anger management classes, we have donor-subsidized in-cell study courses, and we have GOGI group formats. We've got a lot of products on our website that are donor-subsidized. But if a guy's on the inside and he wants to know more about GOGI, he needs to write us and say, hey, I'm interested in more information. We send them a brochure of everything that GOGI offers, and if he wants a donor-paid book, if he's indigent or his family doesn't have the funding, he writes us back and says, please, may I get on the list for a donor to pay for my how-to GOGI book? We will get him a donor for his how-to GOGI book, and then his GOGI journey can begin.
And that's so wonderful. I know that it's a program that's made a difference in the lives of hundreds of and thousands of people. I read on your website that you have over 300 people who have been trained just specifically as facilitators from getting out.
Prisoners, prisoners. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
A lot of them are in. So in the last couple of minutes, Coach Taylor, is there anything that you'd like to share to kind of sum up our conversation and all of the wonderful work that you're doing?
Well, I would just like to tell community to watch out because they're releasing prisoners, and not watch out because you need to be afraid. Watch out because these guys and girls that are coming out are sometimes better citizens than we are. They're living lives of service. They're being humble. They want to give back to community. They are showing up 5 minutes early for work and staying 5 minutes after just to make sure the job is done. We are going to be releasing a surprising number of solid citizens. And I just think that the public is going to be very, very relieved to know that when they start opening these doors and letting these prisoners out, a majority of the ones they will let out are absolutely ready to be better, better neighbors than we currently have.
Well, that is just so wonderful, Coach Taylor. Thank you for sharing that. So it sounds like you're at some place kind of busy right now. I think you said you're
airport.
At the airport. Where are you heading off to next?
I'm headed off to High Desert State Prison, and it's a level 4 prison in California. And the guys on D Yard, which they say is a difficult yard, have a goal that they will have in the next year 2,000 GOGI course completions.
So well, that is so great.
2,000. And then the 900 guys on the next yard, C Yard, said, oh, they think they're going to do 2,000? We're going to do more than them. So now we have a competition between C Yard and D Yard. D Yard says, we're going to do 2,000. My guess is in the next year, because we have a warden who's very supportive, we're going to have more than 10,000 course completions at High Desert State Prison, which was the end of the line for the worst of the worst for so long. Mm-hmm. But Gogi's coming to town, and we're not stopping.
Well, we have been talking today with Coach Taylor, Dr. Mara Taylor, who is the founder of the organization Getting Out by Going In, which you can find online at gettingoutbygoingin.org. Coach Taylor, thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck with all of your work.
Thank you, Emma, for your good work.
Thank you. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. We'll see you next week.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 34th Annual Real Music Film Series taking place January 13th through February 5th at the Northwest Film Center. New works and classics are featured this year, including The Jazz Loft According to W. Eugene Smith, Mose Allison, Ever Since I Stole the Blues, How Sweet the Sound, The Blind Boys of Alabama, the Les Blank film about Leon Russell called A Poem is a Naked Person, and many, many more. Again, that's the 34th Annual Real Music Film Series taking place January 13th through February 5th. All screenings take place in the Witzel Auditorium in the Portland Art Museum, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.